Today, we're talking to Carnival Yogi Sarah about all things beyond carnival, how to hack your sleep to wake up feeling revitalized. If you'd like to join my free fat loss carnival group, the link is in the description. And if you love this podcast, please give it a 5-star rating.
How did you start your carnivore journey about 3.5 years ago?
Well, you know, it was kind of one of those things that I was very hesitant to try. I was at the end of my rope with really my digestion was the worst thing on the list. I had been to see different GI doctors and was just told, you know, you have IBS, there's not really a whole lot we can do for it. Eat more fiber, try, you know, to take these fiber supplements and it will help. And nothing was helping. And I was just really frustrated. And a functional medicine doctor friend of mine, I kind of sought her out and I said, do I need to get labs done? What should I do? And she said, you know, you could do a bunch of labs. I could charge you money and we could go into that whole thing. Or you might just want to try the carnivore diet. She'd been doing it for 5 months at the time. And her name's Dr. Rimka. She's a good friend of mine. She lives here in Atlanta where I live. And so I kind of thought that's crazy. Just eating meat sounds insane. Like, what about vegetables? What about fiber? You know, you have all the questions that, yes, that come up. And so I said, all right, well, no, thank you. And hung up the phone. And then, you know, a few days passed and I just said, this is just not getting better with anything else I'm doing. So what do I have to lose? And so at that point I just decided, all right, I'm going to start it. I'm going to do it. And that's it. And so I just dove headfirst into it. I don't necessarily recommend people do that, dive first in. I think it's better to go, because I was more paleo at the time. You know, I think it's better to do paleo than slowly transition towards keto, then get into carnivore. But I'm just somebody who just jumps in feet first.
I'm the same. I did the same thing. Yep.
That's rip it. Off the Next band-aid. Day. Let's just do it. Yeah. And so I did. And I was shocked that just, you know, a couple weeks later, all the issues with my gut were gone, you know, and I had some other issues like eczema that was coming and going and joint pain to the point where it was just painful to do yoga. I've been teaching for 12 years and I practice, and my practice was really becoming painful and I just really couldn't do it. And so within just like that first month, I would say everything cleared up. And the biggest surprise was my mental health was so dramatically affected. I've always had issues with mental health, on and off antidepressants, and just, you know, never could quite understand why I just felt a little more depressed than the average person. And so at the end of that month, what kept me going was just the way I felt mentally. And like I said, I was only going to do it 30 days and then it ended up just continuing on. And now my diet, it's not totally 100% carnivore, but it is, the majority of my diet is like still meat, you know, eggs, sausage, you know, I do so much animal foods. Butter, ghee, all that stuff, is the center of my diet. And any kind of produce I do has to be seasonal, has to be local. And it's a very, very tiny amount. You know, I just have to put that out there because there's people that are very against putting anything in your body, even a sprinkle of a seasoning. And I did that very strictly for a couple of years. It made amazing difference on my body. And now I'm healed to the point where I can have a little bit of this and that here and there and still maintain those benefits. So that's, in a nutshell, that's really my carnivore journey.
My journey is very, very similar. So overnight just went carnivore. I was doing kind of like keto-ish. So having those almond flour cookies, where you make 2 cups of almond flour cookies and by the end of the night, it's all gone.
It's
keto-based, right?
But the keto treats, the binge. So, every time.
And it's so interesting when it comes to the carnivore diet with regard to, as you said, mental health. I had the same thing. I think a lot of people are going through the same struggles. What is, in your opinion, how does a carnivore diet help with things like depression, anxiety, even how you were saying that you just had a bit of a lower mood or lower energy than others?
Yeah.
How does it help?
You know, I don't know if the mechanism is ketosis. I don't know if the mechanism is just eliminating a lot of the anti-nutrients. The sugar, I know, is a huge component of this. I think sugar is huge for depression. The blood sugar regulation piece is huge for depression, huge for anxiety. And so I think it's a combination of things. And there have been, you know, Dr. Chris Palmer, I've got to get him on my podcast one of these days. He really extensively talks about like real life clinical trials he's doing with people who have schizophrenia and all types of mental disorders, the people that are doing a ketogenic diet that are in ketosis and the benefits for the brain. And so I think it's multifaceted, you know, blood sugar regulation, the benefits of ketosis for the brain. And then, you know, that we don't really know the effects of plant anti-nutrients on our mental health. There's so much, I feel like we're still kind of wrapping our heads around at this point.
Yeah. And I think also the quantity of plant foods that we are told to eat.
Ridiculous. It's stupid.
Exactly.
Stupid. Yeah.
The amount of grains, wheat, dairy, plants,
yeah,
and everything that we actually are eating, it can actually affect our brain health, our hormones, and that kind of thing. And that's probably why transitioning to a carnivore diet or a meat-based protocol works so well, because meat tends to be benign in terms of how it works on, mm-hmm, in terms of toxins. That's what I've, yeah, been told by other doctors, like Dr. Chafee as well.
Yes.
It doesn't cause inflammation like we do things that, like we see with, you know, spinach, oxalates, and that kind of
stuff. Oh, yes.
I know in terms of your perspective, quite recently, as of the last year, it's more than carnivore that has transformed your health. And you are carnivore, very strict carnivore, mm-hmm, but you've been carnivore-ish and perhaps got better results.
Yeah, and I don't know that it's necessarily the dietary change that has brought me better results. I think it's a lifestyle change. And I think that people can make the change to carnivore and do the lifestyle stuff simultaneously. And I think the lifestyle stuff is key. I think a lot of people are missing out on that, and they're feeling better, but they could feel even better.
Yeah.
So learning about circadian rhythms and, you know, just being in touch with those natural cycles of the sun year round, daily, and how those things really do affect our hormones. I mean, when I first learned about all these things, it was really mind blowing that our hunger signals, our the release of thyroid hormones, serotonin, dopamine, melatonin, all of these things are actually controlled by our suprachiasmatic nucleus getting light from the sun, right? Or if you're getting light from your computer, your phone, your screen, also influencing those hormones in a negative way. And there's this epidemic of, you know, elevated cortisol and people who have elevated glucose, and absolutely diet is a part of that. But light is such a huge part of that, that most people have no clue that what they're doing, what the light that they're putting in their eyes and even on their skin is influencing those things as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you talk about light therapy to improve your mitochondria function. Mm-hmm. And in terms of just getting safe amounts of UVA, because, mm-hmm, we are told, you know, don't get UVA, block the UVA, wear a lot of sunscreen. How, mm-hmm, do we get the appropriate amount of UVA and in a safe way?
Well, there's, you know, what we have to understand about nature and our bodies is they're actually very smart. And when we get up and see the sunrise, there is a hormonal cascade that begins. You know, the first hormonal cascade with sunrise is that the body is getting the signal from the sun coming up to turn off melatonin and to turn on cortisol in a gradual way. And then that continues when we get that first bit of UVA light, which is usually around 45 minutes after sunrise. And that is the signal to make thyroid hormone, pregnenolone, which is a master sex hormone, serotonin, dopamine, tyrosine, all those hormones the signal for that to happen is actually UVA light. And so while this cascade is occurring, there are also hormones that are being, that the signals are being sent to your skin, to the melanopsin receptors. And so your skin is preparing to receive those UVB rays, which are the ones that everyone freaks out about. Everyone freaks out about UV light, period. Yes. UVB is where we synthesize D. And so that's the one everyone is like, lather yourself in sunscreen. Don't go out in the middle of the day, blah, blah, blah. You should, but you should also do this safely, right? You want to build up your tolerance, and then you want to make sure that you've had that hormonal cascade starting at sunrise, then at UVA. So there's a sequential order in which that we're supposed to be exposed to light. We're not just supposed to roll out of bed at 11 o'clock in the morning and go to the beach, you know, yes. And wear sunglasses, by the way, because when we wear sunglasses, we block the signal from the sun, the natural sun, to tell the hypothalamus, you know, tell the brain, all right, we're in sunlight, create these specific hormones to make sure we don't burn. You know, if you're wearing sunglasses, you're blocking off that signaling process. And so there's a lot of things people don't really understand. And then using the DMinder app to put in your Fitzpatrick skin type. So if you Google Fitzpatrick skin type, you can tell, you know, you're, it's like 1 through 5. You can tell which number you are. You can use that DMinder app to put in your skin type, and then it will pick up the latitude, the cover you put in. You know, I'm wearing a bikini, or I'm wearing shorts and a, you know, tank top. Put that in the app and it will tell you, all right, it's time to get out of the sun. Or if you're laying out, it's time to turn over. And you don't really want to exceed what that app is telling you. Mm-hmm. So when I say these rays of the sun, these things are not dangerous, it's with that nuance that you can't just go out there for 6 hours on your first day.
Yeah.
You know, perhaps by the end of the summer, yeah, you'll build up this great solar callus, your skin's used to it, your body is fine with it. Yeah, but you don't do that on your first day out there. So there's definitely nuance when it comes to these things, but we're not, none of that is explained to people. It's just lather on the sunscreen or stay out of the sun. And what ends up happening is that we do develop a lot of diseases. There is a higher incidence of skin cancer, melanoma, of people who are indoor workers exposed to artificial lights than there is actually to outdoor workers. Yeah, there's some pretty interesting studies. These artificial indoor lights, think about it, our body is foreign. Our body doesn't know what to do with it. And so the incidence of skin cancer is actually higher in people who are not exposed to enough UV light, enough of the natural rays of the sun.
It sounds like it could be two extremes in terms of people working under artificial light. Mm-hmm. And then the other extreme, which is exposing your body under 6 hours at the beach, which right. is too much. So having, as you said, those safe intervals, using the app, understanding your skin type to mm-hmm. have a gradual sun exposure so that you do have those benefits. Because as you said, our body is extremely intelligent in terms of hormones, and it's not right. just diet. It's not just carnivore diet, it's a lifestyle, which is absolutely amazing in terms of how it impacts the sleep as well. How does light therapy, so in terms of waking up in the morning, having the 45 minutes or so exposed to the sunlight so that you can see, so that your eyes can actually see the light, switch mm-hmm. off the melatonin, increase your cortisol, and then that promotes a cascade of other hormones. In terms of later on in the day, what should we be doing then to switch back on melatonin for sleep?
Yeah, that's very important as well. So, you know, watching sunset is very helpful for that because it's a natural dimming effect. But then when you get inside, you know, and it's dark, you need to be protecting your eyes. Blue blockers are very, very, very helpful. I have a couple of companies I recommend, Raw Optics or Viva Rays. Those are both good quality. That there's a lot of blue blockers. They have not been tested and they say they do all kinds of stuff and protect you, and they really don't. And so I always wear the blue blockers around the house and then keep the lights low. We have a lot of, our house looks a little crazy from the street because we have a lot of like red light bulbs around the house. I will sometimes in the winter time, because it gets dark so early here, I'll run the red light therapy devices. Just I'll put them on the floor and have them in the different rooms. And that's kind of how we illuminate the home at night, because the, you know, bright artificial lights, they do all kinds of things to stress out your brain. And then they tell your brain, like every light signal that you get into your eyes, and we have photoreceptors on our skin, is informing your brain and informing your body of what time it is. And your body wants to respond to that signal and create the necessary hormones. And so if you're in your home and you're on your phone, you know, glued to the screen or watching TV, or you've got a bunch of lights on and it's 11 o'clock at night, your body is still making cortisol. And that just, and you can, in the absence of food, have high blood sugar just from all these artificial lights. And this again is very well documented scientifically. Cause when I first heard this, I was like, no way, that's stupid. No way. But literally extremely well documented scientifically that the lights that are in your home in the evening have the ability to make your blood sugar higher, definitely have the ability to continue pumping cortisol, and cortisol opposes melatonin. So as long as you have cortisol pumping, it's going to be very, very difficult for your body to start to release melatonin. And melatonin is a master antioxidant. We need it to repair, to sleep, for autophagy. We talk about autophagy all the time in the carnivore keto space, and I'm going to fast and do autophagy. Well, guess what? If you're on your phone at 11 o'clock at night, scrolling in your bed, you're not getting autophagy. You know, it's not happening, because you need melatonin in order for that process to happen. And for melatonin to start, you need to have a few hours of darkness even before you go to sleep for that melatonin to start to properly secrete in your body.
That's so interesting. So autophagy is not just about the absence of food. No. It's also about promoting the optimal hormonal profile, which is melatonin, to start the autophagy process. Is that correct?
Yeah. Autophagy and apoptosis, where we, you know, either regenerate cells or we kill off cells. Yes. There is a ton of research about artificial light at night and cancer. And, you know, cancer is such a huge epidemic. For us to avoid cancer, we want autophagy and apoptosis. We want a lot of melatonin at night. We want to be getting our sleep. So the reason why artificial light at night, just if you type in Google artificial light at night and cancer, you're going to get a ton of studies, and they're typically hormonal based, thyroid, breast, prostate, all of these hormonal cancers are tied directly to artificial light at night. Why is that? Because you're blocking the production of melatonin. So, you know, even if your diet is perfect carnivore, that's going to help you, but you could be still thwarting your efforts by your light environment.
Okay. And when you say the light that's emitted from artificial lighting, you mentioned blue light. Mm-hmm. So can you explain for those that don't know, what is blue light? Why is that emitted from artificial light? And also red light therapy, why is that important as well?
Well, blue light's not bad. So I've got this window open behind me. There's blue light outside. Blue light is the strongest in the middle of the day. Like it's 12:30 here. We're going to be hitting, like, you know, the middle of the day where all the spectrums of light are available from the sun. And that's the point. When you're looking at your phone or your computer or an LED, you know, a flickering, the only wavelength of light you're getting is blue. In nature, when you're outside, there's blue light. So it's not bad, but it's balanced out by the other spectrums of light, particularly red light. And so red light is the strongest at sunrise and at sunset, but it's also available in the middle of the day, you know? Okay. So we're meant to be exposed to light in a sequential order, and the rays of light in conjunction with other rays of light. So that's why, you know, people are like, should I go do tanning bed? Should I go do, you know, I have a Sperity vitamin D lamp that I used this winter because I didn't supplement with any vitamin D. when I use the lamp, I have a red light panel running behind me with it, and I have a window open so I can see natural light coming in, right? So it's all about what are we supposed to be seeing? And if we're just looking at a screen or a phone, it's really stressful for the body because there's no red light to balance it out. There's none of the other natural wavelengths of the sun to balance out that light. And it is very, very cortisol inducing.
Okay. So basically when we're seeing these lights, your cortisol is elevated. Does that actually can lead to insulin resistance as well? Mm-hmm. So there's a cascade of metabolic syndrome or mm-hmm. different hormonal variations that can occur just from something simple as light therapy. It doesn't have to be diet, exercise, all the things that we hear that we should be doing. Yeah. And when it comes to sleep, because I know that you are big into like sleep and optimizing sleep. What are the things that we can do beyond carnivore, beyond the light therapy to optimize our sleep as well?
Don't want to be eating anything, you know, 4 or 5 hours before bed, because eating is another thing that's a circadian signal. Yes. So if you're eating at night, you're telling your body it's still daytime. And also there's a little bit of cortisol that, and it's not bad. Like cortisol is not a horrible, terrible thing that we don't want any of. We need some cortisol, right? But when you're eating at night, you're secreting the amount of cortisol that's going to oppose melatonin. Your body is also not going to be able to get into those deeper stages of sleep and repair because it's busy doing the digestive processes. Leptin, which is our satiety hormone, is not going to be able to dock to the hypothalamus. And that happens usually around midnight. But if you're digesting food and you're processing food, leptin is not going to do that docking process. Your hunger hormones are going to be out of whack. Your body's not going to know how much energy it has on it. So eating close to bed is a really, really big one. And there's a lot of people that do carnivore that are like, I'm not going to eat all day till 1 or 2 o'clock. And then I'll eat another meal at like 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And I think that eating after sunset is a really, really bad circadian mismatch and can absolutely be detrimental to your sleep. Even if you're eating a carnivore meal, it's not doing you any favors.
Can I ask a question about that? So here in Canada, the sun sets at 10 p.m.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
So how do you help with that? So when you're in certain parts of the world where, you know, the sunrise here is at 5 a.m., like right now, and it sets at 10 p.m. So what do we do around that?
Well, you always want to prioritize your sunrise. And so, and I think most people need 7 to 8 hours of sleep every night, even in summer. Summer, you may get away with 7 hours of sleep a little bit better. Winter time, you need a lot more. Winter is a darkness season. Winter is like melatonin time. You want to rest, repair, restore everything during the winter. Lots of darkness, lots of melatonin. During summer, a little bit less melatonin. You don't necessarily need to get 10 hours of sleep, but you still want to get a good 7 hours, possibly 8. And so if you're in one of these more northern latitudes where the sun is coming up at 5, the bad news is you still want to be up for the sunrise, definitely. So you have to adjust your bedtime accordingly. So if you are like, okay, well, I need to be in bed by 9 o'clock, but the sun doesn't set till 10, then you want to utilize your blue blockers so that, you know, the red ones, because that helps to start that melatonin production and just start winding down and dimming down a little bit earlier. So, I mean, the sun sets here where I live at like 8:45 at night.
Well, that's still pretty good.
It's still good. Yeah. So, I mean, I try to have my last meal around 5 o'clock regardless.
I'm the same. If I eat around 5, I feel really good. Yeah. And the next day I don't feel bloated, even on carnivore.
Exactly. Yeah.
I feel bloated if I'm having a dinner at around 7, 8 o'clock,
though it's me. The worst.
It's the worst. Last night I had last meal at around 5. I had a massive salmon portion and then some eggs and some camembert cheese. And this morning I woke up, I was like, oh, I actually feel less bloated.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Cause it just gives your body more time to process that food. And, you know, the cortisol is higher at that time of the day. body temperature is higher. So we look at, you know, look at the sunrise and the sunset in our body. We want to do the same thing as our, as we're waking up, we want our body temperature to do this gradual rise. So it's better. I never want to tell anyone not to work out. So work out when you can work out. Probably not ideal to work out at night for circadian rhythms purposes, but you know, anything you do that's going to raise your body temperature, doing that in the first half of the day is best. And then, I mean, but, and think about this way though. So you could do a warm bath before bed, because that actually lowers your body temperature. Things that lower your body temperature, you want to think about doing that towards the end of the day. Eating is going to raise your body temperature. That's one thing I learned from wearing an Oura ring, is that, you know, if I would eat too close to bedtime, my body temperature would stay elevated all night. So again, for that repair process to happen, we want the body temperature going down, just like the sun going down. We want to be cooling down. And so we have to think about things in that sense, you know, think about it from an ancestral lens, rather from like this diet, that food, just step out of that point of view for a moment and think about, does this make sense with my body temperature supposed to be going up right now or down right now? Is this activity helping or contributing to, or harming my goal right now?
And that's when it comes to you eating seasonal vegetables. Mm-hmm. That also ancestrally makes sense, but we weren't eating it that much. So it is kind of that, I guess, you know, keeping it very basic and simple, but I think a lot of us get lost in the dogma that we see in the media. Yes. And that's why I like to ask these basic questions, because we do need to relearn the habits and, you know, how to achieve optimal health, because it's not what we're told.
Right.
So,
That's, I think that important. We've become too obsessed with, like I said, this specific diet or this methodology or that. And we've lost touch with, like, what did our ancestors do? You know, like, how did they live? How did they do this? And, you know, maybe I need to make some tweaks because I'm exposed to a lot more radiation than they were. My body's under a lot more stress than they were. I'm not living outdoors in a cave, which is actually the best thing for your body, believe it or not. But yeah, you have to adjust and adapt some things, but we have to back up just a little bit instead of being so dogmatic. And we didn't have large amounts of tropical fruit year round to be eating. Even in the summer, we didn't have, I mean, I live in Georgia. There's no pineapple trees, you know, there's not bananas growing around here where I live. Those are tropical fruits. So I really don't eat those. You know, I just made an order to my local farm, and this Friday we'll be getting blueberries. We'll be getting some peaches, you know, some nice homegrown local peaches, blueberries. That's okay. If I want to have that in a small amount, then I am not going to feel 1 ounce of guilt about it. But if I'm eating pineapples and bananas in the middle of December, what the heck kind of signal am I telling? I'm telling my body I'm in Costa Rica and it's summertime right now, right? Yeah. And it's just like light. Food is a form of light. It's another way that it's another circadian signal. As I said earlier, eating time and the type of foods that we eat are also a signal to the body. Hey, make this hormone. Hey, it's summer right now. Wait, it's winter. We have more scarcity. We have more darkness. And it's all a form of communication with our body. So,
And even thinking more than that in terms of how we label things. And even in our mind, when we identify with a label, then we associate that we are like that. Like, for example, I have anxiety. I have depression. And I know at the top of this interview, we did discuss that you've had some mental health issues. Mm. I have as well. But then even when you identify with that, it kind of makes you think or believe in a certain way. And that affects your hormones. It affects the way that you think. It affects everything in your whole body. And I did an interesting interview with Dr. Robert Kiltz. Mm-hmm. And then I said, I can't have your, you know, because he talks about the baby diet. And I'm having ice cream. I said, I can't have ice cream. He said, well, Let me just challenge you on that one. Are you sure that you can't? So it's ice cream made from heavy cream and a little bit of cane sugar. And then he just, you know, challenged the idea of, are you sure that you can't have even in a small amount, as you say, with your seasonal fruit and produce, you know, but largely you are eating meat based. So it is, it's identifying what works for you and not being, you know, stuck with the dogma.
Yeah. And there, you know, there's, everyone is different. And I, when I work with someone, if they have a really long history of eating disorders and, you know, eating some ice cream like that might really mentally mess with their head and might cause an issue for them, I'm going to tell them, nah, you don't have to do that. That doesn't promote any health. It's just something that if you want to do it, cool, but you know, you don't have to do that. I think that we fall into this trap of, you know, being in ketosis is dangerous, or you have to carb cycle. You have to do this. You have to do that. And I don't really believe in any of those things, to be honest with you. I've played around with a lot of those things because I have worked on that side of myself, you know, first the anxiety and depression, and then the eating disorder work that I have done, where I don't get thrown off. If I have a little bit of like homemade ice cream, I'm okay. I go back to doing what I was doing the next day. I don't feel the need to have it every single day. It doesn't take over my brain and my mind, but not everybody's like that. Some people might have that little serving of ice cream, and then the next day they're going to wake up and that's all they're going to think about. And then they have to have it again. And then it becomes like an obsession. And so, you know, I think we have to walk the line there and be individualized in that respect. And you have to know yourself also, because I can't drink alcohol. I know that about myself. If I drink alcohol, I will be in the gutter somewhere a few weeks.
Really?
I'm in recovery. I haven't had a drink in almost 6 years. And then
congratulations.
And then before that I had 4 years, but I took a year off because I thought I was cured, and I was definitely not cured. So I really have about 10 years of sobriety, but I have about a year break in there because I decided to test after 4 years to see, you know, was it really that bad? Can I really like not handle the alcohol? And I can't, and I'm okay. And it's just easier for me to just keep that out of my life. And some people are going to be like that with food, you know, and I have to acknowledge that, because that's for me, my life is happier, better, all the things, if I don't drink alcohol, period. With food, I've found that I can have a little bit of this and that, and it doesn't ruin my life, and I can maintain all my healthy lifestyle benefits, and I'm okay. But yeah, everyone's going to react differently. I know people that are like that with food, that are like, I'm food sober. I don't even eat fruit because that messes with my head. And I respect that. So yeah. I think it's important that you know yourself and you know your limits in that regard. And know that it's, you don't have to carb cycle. You don't have to eat seasonal fruit.
Yeah. The same way you don't have to be strict carnivore. It can work for some people. But I think it's just good to just be open and accepting of, you know, there's no one way, as you're saying, to do a diet or a lifestyle. It's what's working for you. Testing, retesting, saying, you know what, that's okay. That doesn't work. And let me find what works for me. So that's always good. Exactly. What's the other strategies around sleep to help with our sleep?
So I either turn off the circuit breaker or I unplug everything in the room.
Yeah.
Because there's radiation that is being emitted from devices, even when they're off, like a lamp that's plugged into the wall. Where's my meter? I have this guy. I have an actual EMF meter. This is a tri-field too.
Cool.
And so getting a meter was something that opened my eyes to how much radiation is coming off of everyday devices. And when you understand the water network of the body, the easy water, which is the exclusion zone water inside of our bodies, right? So we drink water, you have a ton of water. 98% of your body is water molecule. And that is So taking care of the easy water in your body has to do with how much radiation you expose your body to. When you expose your body to, let's just say you put a cell phone on your body, that's why you're never going to see me wearing AirPods. You're never going to see me holding a cell phone up to my head. It's always going to be on speaker out here. Okay. You decrease the water inside of your body 15 to 20%. And this is, again, very well-documented information. I put the book on the bookshelf. There's another book called The Invisible Rainbow, where if you want to see the science, get that book. The last half of the book is science. That is very well documented, that shows the effect of radiation on the body. So when we're sleeping, we want to have as little radiation interfering with that process of sleeping, because it is a form of stress that we are receiving when our body is exposed to non-native EMF. And that is going to stop, again, apoptosis and autophagy from occurring if you've got a lot of radiation. So one thing that I think a lot of people do that I used to do, major guilty, charge my phone beside my head, right? Yes. Next to the bed on the nightstand. Yeah.
Yes. It's our alarm clock.
Right. So get one of these guys.
Okay. Yes.
And measure what's coming off of your phone being charged, and you will be like, oh God, get this thing out of my room. Right. Yeah. So if my phone is going to be in my room, I have it in a Faraday bag and I have it on airplane mode. And so, that's what I do. There's a company called Tech Wellness, and she's got a lot of great stuff. She has like a kill switch. So you want to turn your Wi-Fi off at night. So her company, it's called Tech Wellness. You can buy, an actual switch that you just turn the off button, and it can turns off your Wi-Fi for the night. You can also hook up circuit breakers. So at night, as little interference from radiation as humanly possible. Again, turn off circuit breakers. Don't keep electronics in your room. If anything is even plugged into the wall, unplug it. Radiation is still being emitted. So that's huge. And then any sources of artificial light. Again, remember all those studies of artificial light at night and cancer. I mean, you have photoreceptors on your skin. So I wear an eye mask, but I also have blackout curtains. I have,
you wear an eye mask. So that's to block all the light. So even if you have blackout curtains, there's still light coming in, or potential light coming in.
Potential. And then, you know, my husband, if he gets up in the night, turns on the light, you know, light to the bathroom. We have a small house. We're about to move, but we have a really tiny house. And so occasionally if he's up in the middle of the night, he'll turn the lights on in the bathroom, even though I have special light bulbs in there that are like dimmer, that don't flicker, that are lower, lower brightness, that is still not good. And so I keep my mask on, and then blackout curtains, and then I have unplugged everything. And then I put, if there is anything in the room that has the potential to emit any light, I put electrical tape on it. And then I keep the room
A good thing to do. Put electrical tape. I just unplug it, take it out. I can't have any flickering or any beam of light, nothing. Cause it actually just naturally affects me.
That's now, you know why, because it's those photoreceptors on your skin, and any light in your eyes is telling your body it's make some cortisol. It's daytime. Here's light, you know?
Yeah.
So anytime I go to a hotel, I keep like a big roll of electrical tape with me. And as soon as I get there, I'm like taping everything.
Yeah.
We had a fan, my poor mom, her air conditioning went out this morning, and, had a fan in the bedroom that we hadn't been using. And my husband was like, all right, I'm going to take this to your mom's and try to get her set up. And it had like electrical tape all over it. He's like, oh, what do you do this to every electronic that we own?
Like, but it's true.
Like, I'm protecting your circadian rhythm.
But when you're used to sleeping a certain way and eating a certain way, and when you have to be exposed to the opposite, it's very obvious that something is wrong. And I'm the same. I mean, I don't unplug things, but I'll start doing that. Mm-hmm. I don't have my phone next to me. Only when I need my alarm, but I probably need to buy an alarm clock, a natural alarm clock. And I actually
don't put your phone into, so a lot of the phones, they'll, the alarm will still go off. You can put it on airplane mode and put it in a Faraday bag. So
it
blocks the radiation. So that's what I will do if I have to, you know, make sure I've got that phone, see what time it is. It's in a Faraday bag on airplane mode. And that's going to block out most of that harmful radiation.
Yeah, that's a good tip. I just typically don't have it next to me because it's that feeling of, I want to touch my phone.
I got to look at it. Yeah.
Yes.
The dopamine.
So I really try to do like a dopamine detox. Mm. I know that's a label, but I guess that's what people call it. But I really try to, you know, be away from my phone, be away from social media, go on walks, have a discussion with my partner, or my friend, or my family, have a coffee with somebody and just talk to them and not be on my phone, and that's what is really engaging and really, you know, a natural thing as well. It's very instinctual in terms of how we should communicate with others, not communicating through social media. So, that's good. Any other tips for sleep, to improve sleep?
Let's see. So cold, dark.
Yeah. Cold is a hard one. Cold is a hard one. How do you, what should the temperature be? I try to do cold therapy, but also try to sleep in a colder environment. Mm-hmm. How do you do that?
I mean, I just do it. My family is okay with it.
Okay.
I usually keep the air conditioning around 65 or so.
Yes.
So, I mean, and in the winter time, I keep it even colder. So yeah, we keep it at least in the 60s year round. And my husband has always been one who loves to have the cold house. And so he doesn't complain. My daughter is just like my husband. She's very hot natured like him. So they're both fine with it. I was the one who used to just hate the cold. I couldn't deal with the cold. I freaked out about the cold, but this past winter, I really just embraced cold. I started ice plunging. I started just making myself go outside when it was really cold outside, just, you know, wearing no coat and, just becoming friendly with the cold and then learning the benefits of cold on your body. Once you kind of know that science, you're like, all right, I'm going to do this. This is good for me.
It's very anti-aging as well.
It is. Exactly. I mean, that's how I contribute what me getting pregnant at my age was a big part of that was cold therapy. So that was just something I started doing in October. I did October, November, December, got pregnant in January. And so, I think it's huge for anti-aging.
So that's another amazing achievement that you have, getting pregnant at 42, because you've just turned 43.
I just turned 43,
naturally.
Yes.
And you went through the tests and everything with doctors, but you got pregnant naturally. How did that happen?
I had to change. This is why I got so interested in circadian rhythms and quantum health, because the diet stuff wasn't cutting it. I wasn't successful. And I was seeing doctors all over the country and taking all these different supplements and doing all this testing and spending all my money. and nothing was working. It's very expensive. And I know I'm going to get pregnant. I know this is going to happen. I don't know how, but I was connected to a lot of my friends in the quantum space and none of them charged me. They were just like, hey, you need to be doing cold therapy. You need to be doing red light therapy. Your circadian rhythms need to be on tap. Anytime you can get out in the woods, you need to be out in the woods. You need to be away from non-native EMF. And like, I just did the things that they told me to do and it worked. So I'm really passionate. That's the biggest reason I'm so passionate about teaching all of this stuff is because what did work so hard on my diet for so long and was so like perfectionistic about my diet and still wasn't where I wanted to be hormonally, obviously, still wasn't getting the results that I wanted. And it was hard to go through. And so now having the perspective that I have of like, I still had low testosterone, low progesterone. I was able to get all of those numbers to optimal, or if not better than optimal ranges by using circadian biology, cold plunging, red light therapy, all this, and going out in nature, just simple stuff that was pretty much mostly free. I bought a red light panel. I bought a tub from Amazon and I had to buy ice, but, you know, we think that we have to go through fertility doctors and we have to spend money on supplements and we have to do all these things, and been there, done that, and spent a lot of money I wish I could have back now to spend on my son that will be here in a couple months. I'd love to have that money to go towards, you know, our new house and the nursery, but you know, you live and learn, and hopefully I can help other people with my experience. And what I've learned from this is that, you know, the money and the doctors and all the supplements, not necessarily the route that's going to get you pregnant or having balanced, healthy hormones. Not everyone wants to get pregnant, especially at my age. Most people are like, hell no.
No, it gives me hope because I'm 40 next year. So I'm like, oh my God, she got pregnant at 42, 43. I'm like, yes, I have hope.
Yeah, absolutely. No,
it's good because then, like, even though you follow a kind of a lifestyle, I do mindset, I do everything that you need to do for optimal health, but you do see other people that, you know, pregnancy and natural pregnancy, it's actually not an easy thing. Even if it's actually very difficult. And when you speak to a lot of women that become pregnant, it's not as simple as, you know, you do the deed, get pregnant, 9 months, and there you go. There are a lot of complications, especially in this day and age, especially with what we're eating, how we're living, the whole lifestyle piece.
Oh, yeah.
So your success story is just amazing. It gives, honestly, it would give a lot of people hope to not just follow the way of eating, but the lifestyle. So Sarah, how can people find you?
So I have, I'm on Instagram quite a bit. That's a really good way to find me. It's at carnivore.yogi. I also have a YouTube channel. If you type in Carnivore Yogi, a podcast called the Carnivore Yogi Podcast. And yeah, those are probably the best ways to find me. My Instagram page, I'm pretty active on there. You could message me over there. I don't always get to everybody that messages me. I try to, but sometimes I miss the occasional message. And there's links to all my courses and everything in the bio of my Instagram also.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Sarah. And I hope to speak to you real soon.